Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio, and tonight is Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. And tonight we are urging and suggesting and demanding that coalitions should be joining coalitions. Can we coalesce in time to save ourselves and the planet? And because we have some of our usual suspects returning tonight. We are so fortunate that during the month of Sister Lynn's Earth Day, we have a wonderful poetess and a wonderful poet returning. We miss both of them, and we're glad they're back safe and sound. So without further ado, this is a program that analyzes oppression, which means you must analyze colonialism, imperialism, and the American capitalist system. This is a program which tries to deal with why we have not brought our warriors home. Brother Ralph, your mic is open. Coalitions should be joining coalitions.
Thank you so much, Sister Betty. This is Ralph Pointer, and I'll tell you what's happening. What I've been saying over and over again The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered, except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors, the modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have moved lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us and our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated, and only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And every day we see the truth of that statement. We get more and more situations showing the army of occupation terrorizing our community. And what concerns me is there are so many of us who do not understand, who will not understand, that the army of occupation called the police are doing their job. Their job is to intimidate us, to terrorize us. This has always been the case, but we didn't have cell phones and social medias to pass it around, to make it knowledgeable. Black people were aware all of the time of this terrorism. This was a reason for black folk to be afraid. We were aware of this reality. And as I said again, every day we get a reminder. And here we are again about to vote on the president. And the moment you say vote, you have to recognize the violent ideology around voting and citizenship that has been here forever. Nothing new. They just bring it up in different ways. And today I noticed an economist, a woman of color, Diana Patterson, a global economist. She was at Citigroup, and she published a 204-page report in September about $16 trillion cost to being black in America. And it's like the same thing. Every element in our lives, housing, food, et cetera, we pay more for subprime loans, miseducation, going to the prison, and in the prison, the slavery begins all over again. As in Angola, 45 corporations are making money on slave labor, people unjustly imprisoned because of their color. It is an outrageous situation, but my biggest concern is making those who say they are progressive recognize that we have quite a job to do. This is the vote doesn't mean much. The struggle to be able to vote has meaning, but the vote itself has been taken away. But I won't continue on that because we have a lot of wonderful people to tell us more about what's happening in a different way. Although we've been getting told over and over, Abby Lincoln sings her wonderful song, Stevie Wonder sings his wonderful song, and if you don't know about these songs of liberation, it's another reason to understand that they have been denying us information for a long time. But, Sister Betty, you told us about our two wonderful poets. Will you proceed?
All right. Thank you so much, Brother Ralph. We're going to have you come back later. But as you pointed out, the whole point about the truth is to tell it in such a way that it can be perceived, understood, and then acted upon. So we want to welcome back Brother Professor Louis, who has been working hard all the past couple of months, renewing his artistic strength. And so we cannot wait to hear the results of the struggle. We also have Sister Sarah Adams, the new generation of poets that are coming up, and she has a new poem for us. So first, Professor Louie, welcome back. Your mic is open.
All right. May we all have the grace to think about race, to put it in place, look it right in the face. I don't got the space to trace the full case, but who made up the idea? And is it new that I'm completely different from you? If I got dark eyes and you got blue, nobody says boo, and it's true. Some got blonde hair, some got brown. It don't stop no one from coming around, but how to begin to check out the shape we're in on account of different color skin. Health, housing, jobs, education, who owns the plantation, who gets the frustration, and what formation gets to run the nation. Racism might not be wise, but it buys and decides who lives or dies. A rich mixed couple has a mixed race baby. Woman in Harlem has a black baby. Both babies are one half white. Two babies' opportunities like day and night. For the Harlem baby, there is no maybe. He could say he's mixed till he goes crazy, 'cause he looks like Jay-Z. The mixed race baby's not to blame. He looks exactly the same. He's going Ivy League and got a claim to fame. And some white people are out to park, 'cause they're way more dark than light-skinned black people who carry the mark of being black. When it's a fact, if you look their way, there's darker white people every day. And that dark Latino guy, tell me why. He's either Hispanic or black. White Mexican guy is always sent back. His kid speaks English, so he could be white. He's Roberto, but Robert makes him light and keeps him out of fights. Information not in your graduation. Africa got white people to the fifth generation. What's the formulation of his designation? If he's not African, what is his nation? Lions and tigers are both big cats, but they can't make babies, and that's that. No black and orange lions, that's a fact. But Anglo-Saxons and Africans make it together. Chinese and Eskimos make babies forever, 'cause human beings are all one species. Nephews and nieces, same smelly feces. We're not divided up like Reese's Pieces. There are two kids in my own family. You can't define them easily. They're one-fourth Nepalese, more or less Indian, one-fourth Anglo-Saxon by way of Ireland. One-fourth of them comes from Peru. The last one-fourth Ashkenazi Jew. When the census comes, what the heck? Don't break your neck. Which freaking box are these kids gonna check? Don't need a book to look. It's smack in your face. There is only one human race, but racism got a different story. It was made up for the glory of one over another, for one to breathe and the other to smother. Right now, today, in the USA, you're either white or black. You hear come in or you hear get back. White gets the cocaine, black gets the crack. Try to avoid it with all your might. Here, you're either black or white, 'cause white people made it up long ago. So they made white up high and black down low, from slavery to Jim Crow to mass incarceration, the continuation of the situation passed through the generations right from the jump. You're a champ or a chump. It rolls on today with Donald Trump. And when white working people get kicked around, we're told it's the fault of the black and the brown, when it's the super rich white guy holding us down. So it's good to know, wherever we go, race is a made-up thing. It's not something solid you bring like your ding-a-ling. You could feel for real. It's a load of crap. But racism, we got to deal with wherever we're at. That guy on the street, how'd you know? He comes from Africa when no one said so. Head to toe, he's darker than black people you see every day. Did you think about that or just let it lay? Or do you pray it all goes away? If black people here got some white in them, do white people here got some black in them? And did white slave owners make it with African women? We know it happened, not at a minimum. It's not an act. It's a stone-cold fact.
That's what Thomas Jefferson did. This guy owned people who were his own kids. Did he take a sample of his own example, or was he tripping on NyQuil when he wrote the sequel? All men are created equal, the darkest people on this earth, dark from birth. They're at the bottom of Africa. For what it's worth, go north to Ethiopia. You don't got myopia, walk in the park. People there are a little less dark. Further north, you get Egyptians. Their descriptions, they're brown people, with some exceptions. That's their complexions. A little more north, Sicilians and Greeks, dark with curly hair. Even the geeks and even the freaks. All the way north, you get the Swede. Blonde hair, blue eyes, super light indeed. It all goes gradual, from hot to cold. You could look till you get old, search day and night. There's no clear line between black and white. So race is made up to make you pay. But no matter what you say, racism does not go away. Race is bullshit through and through. But racism, we got to deal with, both me and you. And may we have the grace to think about race. Put it in place. Look it right in the face. I didn't have the space to trace the full case, but I tried to say something about race.
Whoa, Professor Louis is back. The program is archived. You can listen to it over and over and over again. And you can also get some of his CDs. My brothers and sisters, listen, because there's more to come. We're going to hear it. We're going to hear it in many different ways, all educational and enjoyable. Sister Betty, the microphone is yours.
No, the microphone is for the next poet. I know Sister Lynn is smiling because she loved poetry so. And October 8th was the day she came to this earth, and she loved poetry. I am so grateful that we can introduce the next generation of poets. And this comrade, I will call her, is a strong fighter, protesting almost every night in Rochester, the place where they have, I believe, told the police department their services are no longer required, and they're trying to turn the whole system over. Sister Sarah Adams, it is with great pleasure we welcome you back. We hope safe and sound. Your mic is open.
Hi. Sorry about last week. It was a whole lot of craziness with the our police department. So, anyways, I'm going to read the book that I was going to read last week, and it's called Outpost by Jaleel Muntakim. Malcolm X once said, "I am not interested in being American because America has never been interested in me." No, I'm not an American. I'm one of 22 million black people who are victims of Americanism. The apple pie is not in my eyes, because I can see clearly now. The rain is gone. The rain is gone. My vision is no longer clouded by propaganda and pledge to allegiance. Since the 1867 enactment of the 14th Amendment, who knew it would take so long to put an end to this madness, since the enemy has an outpost in our minds. On the shoulders of our ancestors, the enemy reclined, knowing we don't have history in our minds. It being removed to the outhouse where nothing remains but the remains, unclaimed by the next generation. A rudderless ship in uncharted waters. Without history, you're unable to navigate the shores of freedom because the enemy has an outpost in your mind, censoring your thoughts, keeping your behavior towing the line. 11 million African orphans to be 20 million in 6 years, which ultimately means 10 to 15 million African parents will die in such time. And the world is silent because the enemy has an outpost in their mind. Diverting attention to Iraq, masturbating your thoughts so you will support the enemy ejaculating oil, with no consequences to a sequence of distorted facts, bordering on lunacy. As you pay exorbitant prices for oil made patriotic for you to buy. No, I'm not American. With 1 million new Africans in cages, they sit with inverted rages, unable to reproduce. Our number is reduced. in stages, rotting in cages, as their ages are lowering to meet biological stages. The phases are planned in tanks that think, as they expect you to stay hoodwinked because they believe they still have an outpost in our minds. But when you renounce allegiance and declare yourself free, you purge the enemy from where he used to be. Becoming independent to thought, putting your self-interest first, is one step up a ladder that each step can make you matter. And knowing how the enemy's outpost in your mind denied you the time, the reason, or the rhyme to know your rightful place. Sublime in honor of the world's combined populations, no matter the race or nation. No, I'm not an American, for I have no desire to claim its history of rape, murder, and pillage, as there is no longer an enemy outposted in my mind.
Wow, right on. I turned off some mics so that we would stop your echo. Brother Ralph, do you want to respond? This is
education.
A response Sister Sarah
education.
Wrote.
Education, and we're getting it overwhelmingly tonight. It is wonderful. Sister Betty, move on. My goodness.
Sarah, did you want to make a comment on the origins of the inspiration for your poem? You don't have to, but if you wish, you can.
That actually was, I didn't write that poem. That was the poem from Jaleel.
Oh, my
Whoa.
Goodness. Thank
Jaleel.
You.
He has a response to it, though.
Hello?
Yes,
can
go ahead. Say it again.
I said that was not, that wasn't the, whatchamacallit. That poem was written by Jaleel.
Okay,
well. Let me hold it for you so it doesn't echo.
Oh,
that is.
And he's out here smoking. Thanks again. Sister Betty, let's get on with our education this evening.
Tell them.
Right. Sarah, did anyone else with you want to comment before we move on?
Yes, I would like to comment.
Go ahead.
This is her mother. Hello?
Yes, we hear you. You're breaking up, but we hear you.
Oh, this is too bad.
That's Sarah's mother speaking.
Sarah wrote a response poem to that poem that she should read.
Oh, okay, so continue.
Okay.
Thank
no
you.
There, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, and clearly.
Okay. There is no longer an enemy outposted in my mind, for I now know the supremacist's greatest fear. For I now know my time is now and my power is here. Abolitionists of slavery are now the abolitionists of police and their military tactics, because the fact is they do nothing but execute modern-day lynching. They try to hide my history, but I know I come from the sweetest songs and the most elegant names. They try to conceal my power, but I break through and they not know my name. They try to beat us with trauma and drama and lies, so quick to forget that our this is why this country seems to thrive. Country, not my country. Your country, not our country. Because I could never stoop to a level of such disgust and ugliness. I am beautiful, and no amount of scratches and sores from this racist police force could change that. I pledge allegiance to fighting for black liberation. Blue lives don't exist, and black lives can't exist because the white man dressed in blue takes your life if your skin darker than blue, if you're black. So if you're black, the word advocacy becomes more than a word, but something like a call to action, a duty. As Asada said, it is our duty to fight for our freedom, and it is our duty to win. So we will win.
Wow. Thank you so much. I'm going to open Baba Ralph's mic back open. Again, Brother Ralph, your mic is open.
That is so fantastic. The answer and response, fantastic. The historical process is before us this evening. We have the adults, the elders, leading the younger, and the younger responding. Three great poets. My goodness. Thank you again. I will listen to this over and over again. Don't bring tears to my eyes. Sister Betty, please move on.
All right. Thank you, Brother Ralph. We want to open the mic for someone who has not been on for a while. We know she has several tasks and family responsibilities due to COVID, but we just want to thank Sister Sarah. And again, we are so happy Brother Louis, Professor Louis is back. We did miss your voice. Sister Gwen, your mic is open.
Hi, everybody. Thank you to the two poets. I loved your poet, Professor Louis. I just loved it. It was, it's been something you put into words tonight what I've been trying to say for the last couple weeks. And so I really appreciated that. And Sister Sarah, I just feel bad for you because you're so young, and I feel bad that that's your vision of life, and that's what it is for you right now. And I hope that it's going to change. I hope that we'll continue to fight, we'll continue to slog through this thing and keep going, and that your reality won't stay that way. I hope that it changes. So for me, I got a dose of reality this week. I've been caretaking for my father, and I'm in a small town in southern New Jersey, and we couldn't believe that on Sunday a cavalcade of cars came through this little town of Cape May. Cars, there was a big fire truck. I thought there was a fire because we kept hearing this fire truck beeping and making all this noise, and turned out that it was a Trump cavalcade, and there were a lot of people, and there were every truck had a Trump flag, a police flag, and a Confederate flag, and they went all through the town. The police gave them an escort, and I never saw a fire truck, any kind of thing like this before in my life, and it was really scary. And I said to my parents, I said, I feel like we're in Nazi Germany. I feel like the way the people, you know, the brown shirts, how they beat up the regular civilians and the police help them along. And this is what I feel like, because there is no law for these people. These people are going to be able to do whatever they want. And this is just a little taste of what's going to happen on election night. I'm really afraid that on election night we're going to see stuff like we've never seen before, because doesn't look like Trump is going to accept it if Biden wins. And even if Biden wins, I still think that this country is so fractured right now and so violent. And it just really scares me watching it, and watching how people are becoming more fractured and more factioned. And I don't know. I heard something corny today on progressive radio. And the woman, she's a vegan, and she was talking, and she said, you know, she said, nothing ever changes when we just do the anger thing. She said, I'm going to sound really hokey to you guys, but she said, you know, love is the only way to change things. Love is the only way to do it. And I thought, well, you know, that sounds so simple and naive. And I said, but, you know, when I kept walking, I thought, but that really is probably the only way you can change anything. I guess we can keep, you know, fighting each other back and forth, but it never changes. We just get higher up on our self-righteousness on both sides and keep growing further and further apart, and nothing really gets solved. I don't know the answer for solving it. I feel like right now I'm just watching what's going to happen like the rest of us. But I did want to check in tonight and thank everybody. Thank you, Ralph, for having the show, and Betty for being the fabulous, fabulous Betty Davis. The movie star had nothing on you. So everybody have a good night.
Well, thank you so much for that, Gwen. But I must remind you that Ernesto Che Guevara said, the risk of sounding ridiculous, the heart of a revolutionary is love. And so we all love in our own way. And our love is freeing political prisoners. Our love is making a better world. Thank you for that, Sister Betty. The mic is yours.
We're going to move right along. We've got to move quickly. We've added on a little time to the program because We have quite a list of new participants tonight. We want to hear everybody's point of view. One thing we're all united around is that racism, capitalism, colonialism, imperialism, all of these, you have to struggle against. And when you struggle, that's of love. Brother Tom, Syracuse, Manhattan Green Party, your mic is open.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. I'd like to write to repeat an email that I got in answer to a former Peace Corps volunteer who was the chair of the Puerto Rican Studies Department at Hunter College. I was talking about how unfair and how difficult it is for third parties to participate in the political process. And she wrote, and get this, this is the chair, was the chair of the Puerto Rican Studies Department. She wrote, fuck this. No third-party ideological purity this time around. This is existential. Whatever his fault and limitations, vote Biden. We need as big a landslide as possible. Remember 1967 when we voted for Dick Gregory and Nixon won? No difference between Nixon and Humphrey? Tell that to the dead Vietnamese and Cambodians. That was her challenge. So my answer was this. I'm trying to find it right now.
We are waiting.
Biden, my answer was this. Biden was a staunch supporter of the Vietnam War. Tell that to the dead and permanently maimed Vietnamese and Cambodians, as well as to our own troops. You don't remember that Humphrey was stuck defending Johnson's Vietnam policy while Nixon said he would end the war, although he lied. And by the way, I joined the U.S. Navy well before I entered the Peace Corps, and I am active in the anti-war Veterans for Peace. Recently, the Democrats and Republicans voted to increase the bloated military budget. The Democratic leadership severely criticized Trump for negotiating with the Taliban and for considering withdrawing our troops from Iraq and Afghanistan. Not that I would ever support anything Trump says, because like Nixon, he is a liar. But Biden has been and is in favor of an aggressive imperialist foreign policy. Tell that to the hundreds of thousands who have been displaced, permanently injured, or killed in the Middle East. I am shocked that as a former member of the Peace Corps, you gloss over Biden's faults and limitations, and you blame, quote, third-party ideological purity. And saying, quote, fuck this, is no way to react to my email on third parties.
Well, thank you, Tom.
I enjoyed the program so much. There's so many wonderful voices. Tom Syracuse, a wonderful voice that's going to give us more and more education. And maybe if we get all of this education together, we will react, we will change things. Sister Betty, the mic is yours.
All right. Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Gwen. I want to go on. The last four digits are 8341. 8341. Did you want to make a comment? 8341. The first three digits are 813. Your mic is open. 8341.
Uhura, Sister Betty, this is Chimurenga Waller with the African People's Socialist Party.
So, did you want to make an announcement, I hope?
Yeah, I do. Today we announced the candidacy of President of the International People's Democratic Uhura Movement, Columbia Antoinette, for this particular election in Ward 3 in St. Louis, Missouri. She's Herdosha Columbia Benton, and today we announced her candidacy for the March 2nd, 2021 primary, Democratic primary in St. Louis, Missouri, for Ward 3 alderperson. So it's really an important election that's coming up. We're trying to unseat sort of a family dynasty who's been in power for 43 years in Ward 3. Bosley has been in that seat. So what we want to do is call on people to go to our Facebook, elect Herdosha Columbia Benton, go to our donate button, hit that button, and donate to Columbia Antoinette to get these scoundrels out of Ward 3 seats. And we hope everybody can support that. She believes in reparations to the African community. That's at the top of her platform, and she's fighting for black community control of schools as well.
Well, thank you so much for that, and I hope you come back again and again. Have her come back and keep us involved in this. And that tells us again that the struggle continues. We're not giving up. We're not laying down. This is a heck of a fight, and we're in it to win it. Sister Betty, the mic is yours.
I cannot thank you enough, Brother Chimurenga. I especially want to say to people, if you do have to run as a Democrat, you should run as Sister Columbia. I've not ever birthed a child, but I claim a whole lot of them. I claim Sister Sarah. I claim Columbia. They're both warriors, and they're honest, and they're decent, and they're strong. And I just love them. I just love them. I just love them. So the whole point of the revolution is really all about love. And both of them love their people. I see Sarah's mom is on the call. I'm going to open her mic and see if she wants to say a few words, because I know she has been leading the struggle in Rochester, along
Rochester,
with Sarah's father. The mic is open. Did you want to say a few words?
I'm just listening because I have a chance to listen tonight. I love you guys.
All right. Well, again, we honor you. The struggle to take back your school system, the struggle to get the funds that were allocated and withheld by the gangster Cuomo, and we definitely applaud your struggle against the army of occupation in Rochester and all the police murders that have been going on there. We thank you and we honor you. And again, we appreciate you loaning us Sarah from time to time. Thank you.
Thank
you. Okay,
without
further ado, we see we have the last four digits are 5844. The first digits are 219. Did you want to, your mic is open, did you want to make a comment? 5844.
Good evening, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph. This is Dr. Zena with Louisiana United International. I think Ms. Belinda's on the line and has some announcements. So I just want to say hi.
Definitely.
And glad to hear from you, here to be able to join in.
Well, you are welcome, and we honor you for getting on board and your struggle for the political prisoner on the African continent. Did you want to say his name?
Marafa Hamadou Yahya, yes, so much. Thank you so much. He very much is encouraged by our support for him, and we're going to continue to fight until he is released there in Cameroon.
All right. Thank you so much. And without further ado, we always recognize our comrade and warrior from this New Orleans, Louisiana, for the valiant struggle she has waged to free Reverend Victor and also 8,000 prisoners of the death camp of Angola Prison. Sister Belinda Parker Brown from Louisiana United International, your mic is open. Thank you for calling in.
Good evening, Sister Betty, Brother Raph, and I, you know, my love is so deep for you guys, and I'm telling you, this revolution is all about love, and love has got us winning on the front right now on United on all fronts for our people, for our black people that have been caught up in this cesspool of injustice, especially of what's happening here in the state of Louisiana. We're calling for free them all. Free them all. And no one is free until all of them are free. And I want the world to know, Sister Betty, Brother Raph, without the support from you all and the love that you have shared and showed here in the state of Louisiana, Louisiana is going to be a sign and a wonder for the whole world to see when people get free from these death camps that they have been held hostage and kidnapped in as we speak. And Pastor Victor send you his love too as well. And what he's saying is that we need to put an injunction against all the courts here in the state of Louisiana. They are committing criminal acts and holding people hostage, making slaves out of them here in the state of Louisiana. And we're saying enough is enough. Thank you so much for allowing me the time to share, Sister Betty and Brother Raph.
Did you want to give us your website again so people can go to your website, sign your petition, make the donation?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much, Sister Betty, for giving me that opportunity, because we need all the help that we can get. And I want people to call me. My number is 985-503-0626, because we just launched another campaign on predatory policing. And, you know, I think Dr. Zena, so much for the great work that she is bringing all of this stuff to the forefront, that we're saying that, you know, we got to expose what these people are doing. They're using the system to cover up their wrong. They're hiding, and they're throwing a rock and hiding their hand. They're allowing the fox to guard the hen house. So what we're saying is that we want the world to know now that it's not going to happen on our watch. We don't care who get in office, whether it be, you know, because both parties, I heard somebody say earlier, Sister Betty, that, you know, we can't trust neither one of these presidential candidates. And we're in, you know, we're in big trouble if we think that they're going to do anything for us. What we're saying is that as black people, we have to have our own agenda, our own plan, and bring them. They're going to have to come to our table now, because the eyes of the people have came open. We're no longer going to tolerate this game that they done played, and we're saying game over. Call Louisiana United International at 985-503-0626, or go to our website and support us. Donate. You know, every little bit helps. Our website is www.launited.org. That's launited.org. And we also saying, Sister Betty, Brother Raph, that you are the real comrades. Okay, they're serious about this revolution and this movement that we're in, and we're going to help our people by all means necessary, and freedom, liberation, black power.
Thank you so much for that, Sister Belinda Parker-Brown. Down there in the deep part of the South, Louisiana, near Angola Prison, the slave camp was turned into a prison, which went right back to the slave camp that it was. And I hear revolution in the air. Sister Betty, the mic is yours.
Right. I want to say to the people from Louisiana and the people from Rochester and the people who are struggling in Ferguson that this is what revolution looks like. And every step you take and every word you speak, you are educating, you're educating so that people know what to do. And I thank you because I know the sacrifices you're making. I know you don't get sleep. I know you're risking stuff with COVID because you're interacting with the community. And all of us, we send you our strength and our love. I'm going to open. I've got so many people on the call here. I'm going to try and open Brother Chimaranga's mic one more time so that he can tell people where to send donations as well. Because although none of us are rich, when we pool our money, we can fight back against the rich. Brother Chimaranga, did I open your mic?
Okay. Thank you, Betty. So you can donate online on our Facebook page at Elect Herdosia Columbai Bentham, and go to the donate link, or you can send checks in the name of Committee to Elect Herdosia Bentham, Committee to Elect Herdosia Bentham, and send those checks to 4207 College Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri, 63107. Make your checks out to Committee to Elect Herdosia Bentham, HERDOSIA BENTUM, and send it to the Committee to Elect Herdosia Bentham at 4207 College Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri, 63107. Appreciate
you. Okay. No,
thank
we
you
appreciate
so much
you.
St. Louis, Missouri. In the house. The struggle is breaking out all over, and this is what we have to have. Like the 60s, the struggle was breaking out all over, and this time we have to keep it going. Thank you so much, Sister Betty.
All right, the last four digits are 1623. I'm not sure if I opened up your mic. 1623. The first three digits are 269.
Hey, Black Power.
All right. Did you want to make a statement or an announcement? If you wish to, your mic is open.
Well, I was very much listening in as I'm a part of LUI as well, Ms. Belinda Parker Brown. My name is Dennis Knowles. I'm out of Battle Creek, Michigan. And, of course, we're following all over the gathering that we all, and I'm grateful for it, to see that we are coming together because this struggle is becoming now more and more of a bloodbath, as you well see. And we are definitely on the rise. I was just on the phone with some young people out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. I don't know if you've ever heard of Benton Harbor, Michigan, who are basically looking for elders like ourselves to advise them in this struggle that we're in. This is not conventional anymore. It's not going to be that conservative. I was listening to Sister Belinda Parker Brown. The conservative cracker and the Democratic cracker bid us all the time for a vote, but we never get anything by way of any tools that are constructive in our communities, that will do anything in our communities for us, for our people, for our youth, for our women, for our black men in prisons. And it's still so bad to know that Louisiana is a slave hub. One of the slave hubs in this country that still is designated in slavery. Right now, we're in a super war that if we don't begin to defend ourselves and protect ourselves as well as construct for ourselves and stop our dependency on the breasts of America, then we will be surely following suit another 50 to 100 years. I think that we're waking up. I think all of us on this line are in unison. All of us that are speaking are in lockstep because we have to not only build for ourselves, we're going to have to start defending ourselves. We're going to have to start, if you have carry a license, do it legally. Know your laws. Concealed carry in the state of New York, isn't it? Do it legally. be prepared, because you don't know where they're going to be coming from. As a matter of fact, in Albion, Michigan, I have a friend that lives in Albion, Michigan. On last Friday, his sister's car had broken down on the back roads, of Albion, Michigan. And he went to jump her car. They had to wait, though, for a tow truck because he couldn't jump her. He didn't have enough power. But on the way out, after they had been jumped, she drove ahead, and he was in following. A car of white boys came alongside of her, saw she was a single female, black female, in the car, and they attempted to make her wreck to the side of the road. If he was not there to protect his sister, they would have done whatever unimaginable things that they do to our women or to black men. Lynching is on the rise. These things are real, and I'm not saying anything that we don't already know. But I'm making this point that we're going to have to coalition as one body, one voice. All organizations need to culminate together in one lockstep movement. We need to ferret out all of the snowballs, and we will, and we should, anyone that would derail a movement. We can no longer go to the rooms of the churches called the Jesus Christ and wait on the Lord, because it'll never happen. We can no longer stand by and wait on them to do for us what they've been promising but never do. We're going to have to start doing for ourselves in a strong fashion. Our kids need to be taught. We have skilled people in communities that can train our kids. There are dollars that we need to access amongst ourselves, like you said, those little dollars, to start building in our communities. And anyone running for an office, anyone running for an office in any ward in the state of New York, needs to, and they're black, they need to culminate those dollars to put programs that are doable in their own neighborhoods, accessed by those masses of grassroots people who are willing and hungry. Our kids are hungry. We have skilled people in the community that can build within the community. These are the things that we have to discipline ourselves to do. We have no time anymore to sit back waiting on the Lord. We don't have any more time to sit back and wait on an empty promise. Right now, we are in a war. I'm going to say black power, and thank you for letting me intercede there.
Could you give us the name of the organization?
I'm with Louisiana United International with Sister Belinda Brown. I'm also
all
with
right.
the New Black Panther Party, in which we have a blog talk. I know you're probably familiar with it, NBPP blog talk. You do that online. And that's every Monday from 8 our time, which is Eastern time, 8 p.m. until 11 p.m. Very, very informational. Then there is the Black is Back Coalition. You need to look them up with Chairman Yesentelli. And there's always Sunday education with the Black is Back Coalition, and this is all online. This is all live Zoom. This is all live Facebook. So these are educational entities that we need to strap ourselves up with. Then we are also with Grandmaster Jay. And I love that brother in that he's taking a gun stance. He's taking a stance with guns, showing these crackers, these things, these beasts, that we're not afraid. We're not afraid. We're not there to terrorize. They're not there to kill, steal, and destroy. They're there to protect groups of us that need protecting. But we all need to now form together and start strategizing on our self-defense. We need chapters all over, as you well know, of any organization that is doing the good job, the good deed for the communities in which we all serve. Black Power?
Well, thank you.
Brother
so
Ralph?
Much for that. Yes, and I say thank you so much for that. We're hearing from around the nation, but the basic tenet of slavery was the non-right of self-defense for the slave. And it's good to hear that people understand that and are taking up that challenge of self-defense. Because if you do not self-defend,
it will no longer exist. Thank you for that, Sister Betty. The mic is yours.
Okay, we have another analyst in the house who's longstanding, goes all the way back to protesting the Vietnam War, was a member of Youth Against War and Fascism. Brother Joel, your mic is open, and thank you for waiting. Sister Dolores and Brother Hagen, we see your mic. Go ahead, Brother Joel. We have extended the time. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Okay, Joel, can you hear me now? Yes, go ahead.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to speak among people that are really really conscious and into the struggle and who understand the deeper realities than most of the people in this country, who, however, will be needed if we're going to really overthrow the system. So we have a lot of work to do to overcome the false consciousness of the millions and millions of people in this country who don't envision the possibility at this point. Maybe deep down, I think everyone does. Deep down, everyone does. But a lot of it gets buried in the nonsense and the brainwash that we're all bombarded with all the time. And it takes a lot just to overcome that. And thereby everyone on this program should really be congratulated for doing that work and having that understanding. We see that the it was just a spokesperson that called in from Michigan. And when you look at what's happening out there, that was the place where they big crowds marched against the COVID precautions. They marched against people wearing masks, and but they did something new. They marched down the streets with AR-15s, with semi-automatic guns. They took them into the state house. Supposedly the police emptied out the ammunition before allowing them to do that. But they're showing an intent. And then there was a group among them that apparently had some kind of a plot to kidnap and execute the governor because they think that she's not enough of a police state enforcer of the system. They think that that you have to be a full-fledged fascist before they might kidnap you and execute you. And apparently that's what's developing there in Michigan. And we know that it's been called the militia state. And that represents the development of shock troops on the right. And they're coming after all of us that call in programs like this. They're getting ready to come after all of us. And we can't depend on the police to protect our rights or to protect our lives. As I think Gwen was speaking before about a big cavalcade that they had in down in southern New Jersey. And you had all these fire trucks and police cars, and the police, I guess, were nominally guarding the demonstration observing it and making sure that no laws were broken. But hey, a lot of those police are really into the same thing. To some degree, there's not even much of a distinction between the police departments and the militia, except the police nominally have to obey the rules of the political system, which is trying to preserve an illusion of democracy to a certain extent while exercising the dictatorship of the billionaires and trillionaires at the same time, whereas we have the militia forces that are breaking out and have decided to take rule into their own hands not in a revolutionary way, but in the way of the brown shirts controlling the streets. And we talk a lot about the show about self-defense. Very often, when you run it, you talk about self-defense and the Second Amendment and to preserve, not so much the Second Amendment because it's written in the Constitution, but it's considered a fundamental right. And supposedly, we all have the right to keep and bear arms under the Constitution. And people say, oh, that's a right-wing line. That's the right-wingers all say that. But that's they say it, and a significant number of them are doing it. They're already marching in the streets. A lot of them have military experience in armed fights. They have military experience in fighting as armed individuals and snipers and stuff like that. And they also fight in groups, in platoons, in companies, battalions, and on up to divisions and so on. They have all of this experience and training. A lot of the left is shot through with a very heavy dose of pacifism, which even denounces or shrinks away from self-defense when it's necessary. So the fact that that this kind of line has been taken up and emphasized by part of the right wing is only more of an argument, because forget about the government for a minute. You need to defend yourself against people like that that aren't even officially part of the government, but in a certain way they're beginning to merge with it, because they have somebody in the White House right now that's encouraging them at every step of the way. Because after they marched in the streets with their semi-automatics and they went to the state capitol with their semi-automatics, they hadn't started shooting people yet or anything, but you know that the plots are going on and getting very thick. And they're brandishing their guns with an eagerness to use them. And so that's another argument to people on the left to raise the question of the right to keep and bear arms. And not only the right to do it, but the left has to begin to some degree at least training and preparing to use it just in case you might have to defend yourself against somebody that's armed in that way. And like I say, you can't just depend on the police. That would be what a Democratic Party liberal would say. Oh, yes, those are very bad people, and therefore you have to rely on the police to protect you, because they haven't broken away from the idea that the police are only the armed self-defense of the same class that the militias are the more fanatical self-armed group, and there's a lot of interpenetration between the two. So if you can't rely on the police and you're having this kind of a thing building up and you're having somebody in the White House encouraging them, after they marched with those weapons, he put out a tweet to liberate Michigan, meaning to take over the current political structure and to substitute a full-fledged fascist regime there. And we don't want that to happen. We know that it'll involve a great deal of self-defense, and it has to be organized on a large-scale basis, because one or two people can perhaps encourage others and can get the ideas around in the beginning, but ultimately it's going to take more people to be organized. And that, by the way, would be the only way to deter violence in general, because if the left is well enough armed and well enough trained and has a mentality of this type of self-defense when it's necessary, then the other groups might think twice before attacking basically unarmed people, like this Kyle Rittenhouse, who basically shot three unarmed Black Lives Matter demonstrators in Kenosha, claiming self-defense against these unarmed people. He traveled from Illinois, drove 25 miles with a semi-automatic or with some kind of an assault rifle. He wasn't kidding around. He came out there looking for trouble and having a weapon that could kill people, and did actually kill two people. And they're holding up his extradition. And there was a truck driver who plowed through a number of protesters on a highway, and he also got his charges completely dropped, self-defense, whereas somebody that was probably defending a Black Lives Matter demonstration against a right-winger, or at least as accused. We don't know if he's actually someone who did it, but one of the right-wing attackers actually died. And what happened? There was no outcry of self-defense. The FBI and the police just cut him down, the suspect. They didn't give a trial, due process, an arrest, anything like that. They just cut him down, and we had a president of the United States respond to that by saying that's good. That's what they should be doing, because the community, get this, the community needs retribution, meaning forget about any kind of due process or trial. Just shoot people down who are basically unarmed protesters or caught unarmed at a certain time, and the revolution has both components in it. It has a component of armed and deadly struggle, but really that's self-defense, because even if you're going on the offensive to overthrow this system, you're defending the world against a system that is destroying the world and is spreading death, disease, and grinding poverty throughout the world that need defense. But we're actually talking now, when we're looking at the consequences of this system. Months ago, the temperatures reached 125 degrees, and in L.A. County, 121 degrees. They are destroying the planet. We should end up with a dead planet, given the imperatives and the way that the capitalist system operates, so that a revolution, even one that takes the offensive, is actually a defensive move against a system that is turning us into a society of homicidal maniacs who are absolutely irresponsible, to the point where the entire world can be wiped out just by the workings of the system, let alone what's happening now, though, with the rise of armed fascists that are threatening us all with immediate death, and mainly waging it against unarmed people. That's what's going on right now, and it may escalate a great deal at the time of the election, because the fires are being stoked, and we have somebody that even the president and the vice president would not even say that if they lost the election that there could be a peaceful transition. So they're openly calling for civil war in order to cling to power and to keep moving the country internally to the far and far right. Now,
thank you so much.
I want to say the other thing is that in this regime, in the beginning, it got a certain, the bright spot was considered that he was talking to Putin, and the Democrats were attacking from the right. They wanted him to be more warlike as they were advocating in Syria and other areas of concentration, with Russia moving nuclear weapons into Ukraine for training purposes, right up to the Russian border. That's what the Democrats are sort of proud of. But but if you look at the real powder keg of the world, it's the Middle East, and Trump has given away things that no other president has done up until now, like moving the embassy to Jerusalem, thus directly contradicting the right of the Palestinian people to have that as their capital, and also giving the Golan Heights to permanent Israeli control. So he's working hand in hand with the, and as we know, they're supplying the Israelis with billions of dollars. They're bombing Syria every day, and one of the effects of that was that the Russians that used to be more allied with the indigenous people of the Middle East are now turning a very soft line, and even invited Netanyahu to march in the World War II victory parade in Moscow. I believe the only foreign leader to do so. And so we see now that there's more to it than meets the eye, and that the seeming overtures of better and peaceful relationships could mean uniting against certain powers against others. And this is again raises the prospect. The revolution and the counter-revolutions are worldwide. It's an international struggle, and therefore one of the problems with the liberals is they don't think very much. They say, well, we have to stop Trump because basically they point to domestic policies that are costing lives, but they're not really looking at the international situation where the Democrats and the Republicans really compete to be the most aggressive and the most deadly and the most, as we saw in the recent Democratic Party, basically criticizing Trump for not being warlike enough against Russia and China. So
Joel.
I think I made the point.
Yes, you have. I hope you will repeat it. Because that is why we have this program. We want to be able to connect the dots of capitalism and imperialism. And what you're talking about is mega capitalism and imperialism. I want to open up one more mic before we go to Brother Hagen. And I want people to understand that Sister Belinda is trying to represent what we're talking about tonight. She has formed coalitions with other coalitions. And the Brother Dennis made it clear that every living thing has the right to self-defense. On this planet, if you don't defend yourself, you won't be around in the next for the next generation. We want to open up the microphone for, I believe it is 5844. Your mic is open. 5844, your mic is open. Yeah.
Thank you, Sister Betty. Ms. Belinda asked me to expound on this concept of predatory policing. You know, I can hardly believe that it's happening, but, you know, nothing surprises us at this point. What happens with the predatory policing is that, you know, they're not even waiting until there's a crime. They're arresting and asking questions later. So what happens is the police are coming out, the sheriffs are coming out to the parishes, to the people in mostly seems like black, residents in the Louisiana parishes. And they're having altercations, and they're resolving them by arresting, whoever they're talking with. You know, perhaps the police get to arguing with you, but they arrest you. Now, mind you, and then you get charged with resisting arrest. Now, if you are going to be arrested, there ought to be some semblance of a crime. There ought to be some allegation of a crime. But what has happened is even if there's no there's been no crime alleged, the law enforcement didn't witness a crime, they are arresting you and then charging you with the felony of resisting arrest. So the process of being arrested is the crime. And perhaps they may throw in another felony charge of force against police or disturbing the peace. But what we're really trying to, what really has got our mouths wide open is that there either is no grounds for a crime and the only thing that you're charged with is resisting arrest. Well, if you're going to be arrested, there should be a crime. Or they're charging you with resisting arrest. And then throwing in allegations that are only infractions. Say, for example, one woman was charged with driving her motorcycle without a helmet. These are infractions. These are not things that are supposed to result in arrest. Now, the reason why we're calling it predatory policing is because once you get arrested and these files are charged, then you are going to jail. One woman had to pay several hundred dollars to get her property out of storage. They have to be bonded out. They spend overnight in jail. Then they're in a position, they've got these charges, they've got to hire an attorney, or we've got to pay for the attorney through the public defender. And so they have these serious charges dumped on them. And what is your motivation but to take a plea and end up with probation or what is it called? The deferment program, plea to disorderly conduct, misdemeanor. And it's just a traumatic experience. We have people who are literally afraid to come out of their house based on this blatant abuse of law enforcement power, police power, often with racial discriminatory motivations. We all know about the phenomenon of white police.
Dr. Crenshaw.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to cut across this because we've got a long list of speakers. But mm-hmm. what we have always said in the movement is that this is terrorism. And this goes all the way back to the South. So this is, and you know this is not new. You can call it predatory, whatever. But this is the job of the Army of Occupation. That's why what Brother Dennis said is important. That's why what Ralph's Credo says is important. Not everybody is a warrior, but when our warriors stand up and say, you shoot one of mine, I'm going to shoot back, we got to say amen. And I really appreciate that there are people working in the vineyards to educate people, to make them understand, as Harriet Tubman said, she would have freed a lot of slaves if only they had known they were slaves. So we don't have to give it legal jargon. Yes, they do plea bargaining, and you end up in county jail with COVID, and one way or another, you're going to die. That's terrorism, which leads to genocide. And in that context, everybody has the right to self-defense. I want to move on to Brother Ralph to see if you want to respond to the last three speakers.
Yes.
Brother Ralph.
We have to remember that Joel Meyer always gives us a fine understanding of what is happening. He understands the overall picture, and I look forward each week to his analysis as to what is going on. And we have many, many examples, as Dr. Crenshaw gave us, of the black tax. This is the trillions of dollars that go into the economy every year. And sometimes it's more than just money. It's your life. And so, Sister Betty, we're getting this information. I'm leaning back and enjoying. Please, the mic is yours.
Okay, Brother Hagen, we're going to open up your mic. And Sister Dolores, you're coming right after him. And I see we have Brother Val is also in the queue. Go ahead, Brother Hagen, and thank you for waiting.
Yeah, listen, Sister Betty, in the interest of time, I'd rather let Dolores go ahead and proceed. I can defer
okay,
to next week.
Right. We've got time, but I will open up Sister Dolores' mic. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you, Henry.
You're welcome, Dolores.
I first want to thank the two poets. Those two poems were just lovely, lovely, lovely. I want to remind you know, the folks in New York that we're having early voting starting this coming weekend on Saturday. And I got an email from a friend of mine telling me that she had received a text from her friend and that that friend just finished poll manager training. And that she wants everybody to know something, that if you're checking in at the polls and they happen to write anything on your ballot before they give it to you to put in the voting machine, a letter, a check mark, a star, an R or a D, any writing of any kind, please request a new ballot. Your ballot could be disqualified if it is written on. So please look out for this when you go to the polls. Okay. So that's something that's really good to know. Just real quickly also, regarding elections, I got some mail from Lindsey Graham, you know, the U.S. Senator from South Carolina, and it turns out that it's a letter. And just real quickly, I'll read it. He says, I couldn't believe it when I first heard the news that my Democrat opponent has now outraged me by nearly $7.4 million this year. No Democrat candidate in the state has ever raised so much. More than 93% of those donations came from outside South Carolina. It is clear that liberals from across the country are determined to take me down. Maybe it's because I stood up for Brett Kavanaugh and the presumption of innocence until proven guilty as Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee did their best to destroy a good man while his family watched. Or maybe it's because I was fed up with the Democrats' sham attempt to impeach our duly elected president simply because they can't stand him. Or it could be any number of common sense conservative positions I've taken over the years. But of this I am certain. Quote, the radical left will say, do, or spend whatever it takes to defeat me. With just weeks until Election Day, I need to know if you'll stand by my side. That's why I'm counting on you to reply to this appeal with the contribution of $25, $35, $55, $100, $200, $500, or $1,000 or more for my re-election campaign. So now I have this dilemma. Should I just send him the $25 or should I just, you know, go ahead and just give him the $1,000, you know? So, yeah, that's going to be occupying me for a while.
That's pretty good. Lindsey Graham.
And, you know, I got this mail. I opened it up, and it's a letter from Lindsey Graham, Demers Council. I said, oh, holy shit. You know, where did he get my name from? Anyway.
Let me tell you. I don't think you're going to lose much sleep on that. And
no,
none
I
of
doubt
us
it.
None of us
the
on the program.
Is, right. A couple of days ago, not even just a couple of days ago, but I started thinking about this again. For quite a while, I've been wondering where the name Rikers Island came from. You know, we're talking about prisoners and the you know, the industrial complex and all. So, so I checked it out, and it turns out that it's owned by a man, well, this was back in the 1800s. It was owned by a man named Richard Riker. He owned the island, and he was a judge, a criminal court judge here. And they mentioned that at one point, New York City ranked only second to Charleston, South Carolina, in cities that held the most slaves. So about this judge, Richard Riker, he abused the Fugitive Slave Act. He would speed up the process to capture blacks who fled the South and collected a kickback fee from bounty hunters for each slave that he helped send back to slavery. And the bounty hunters also kidnapped children of free blacks in New York City. So now this judge, you know, every time I hear the name Rikers Island now, you know, before I was just curious about why it was named that, but now we know named after this horrible judge, criminal court judge, and he uses authority to transport blacks to slavery and jail other black people for years without a hearing or a trial, which is currently still happening, right? Without a hearing or a trial. Yeah. So, the other thing that I wanted to mention is that I was reading a report by the Associated Press of an article that was in the Chicago Sun-Times, and it's about Colin Kaepernick. He has a publishing company, and he's soon going to release essays on policing and prisons. And it's a project that he's entitled Abolition for the People, the Movement for a Future Without Policing and Prisons. And then it mentions that he envisioned and curated this collection of essays following the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And in his introduction, Kaepernick writes, "The killings of Floyd and Taylor forced our nation to grapple with not only the devastation of police terrorism, but also the institutions that constitute, enhance, and expand the carceral state. Some of the pieces are written by political prisoners and family members of those who faced police violence and incarceration. Other essays are by organizers, movement leaders, and scholars. So Colin has gathered respected leaders on abolition to build and support his stance on a society without police." So he's, and the description of his writings from the article say he has delivered a comprehensive body of work to amplify a national conversation. So, you know, in 2016, you know, he took the knee to protest racism and police brutality during the national anthem, and has since then not played in the FNL at all. So, you know, we should be looking out for these essays that he's publishing. So, you know, like if you want to check it out, it's entitled Abolition for the People, : The Movement for a Future Without Policing and Prisoners by Colin Kaepernick. And the, like I said, the essays, it's a whole series of them. So I thought everybody might be interested in that.
Thank you so much for that information.
Really.
Dolores.
Go ahead, Ralph.
I spent time on Rikers, and I didn't know where it came from. And when I hear the name Colin Kaepernick, I know that he's one of the finest quarterbacks in the league. He is has not played since he took a knee. And we must remember, Ruth Bader Ginsburg spoke out against his nonviolent representation, taking advantage of the skills that he had developed merely by taking a knee to protest the outrage that is going on. And so when people
thank you, Brother Ralph. We're going to go quickly to Brother Hagen and then Brother Val. Brother Hagen, your mic is open, please.
Okay. This article comes from the Daily Challenge, May 27th, 2010, and it was written by Bill Fletcher, senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and the past president of TransAfrica. Title of the article is, "If You Are Really Angry About Immigration." And we know, of course, that Trump is notorious for insulting the squad and people of color and telling them to go back to where they came from. Quiet as is kept, outside of the indigenous people, we've all come from someplace other than the United States. If you are really angry about immigration, then you should be asking questions about U.S. foreign policy. In the aftermath of the extremely racist Arizona anti-immigration legislation, SB 1070, again, this is 10 years ago, and the fact that opinion polls seem to indicate that a majority of the public supports this obliteration of basic human rights, it is worth asking a few tough questions. Let's start with these. What was the financial collapse? Was the financial collapse in the fall of 2008 caused by immigrants, documented or otherwise? Has the decline of the U.S. auto industry and the corresponding loss of thousands of jobs been a result of immigrants? Has the U.S. lost its shipbuilding industry due to immigrants? Is there any recession or depression on record that can be attributed to immigrants? If you cannot demonstrate that immigration has had anything to do with the declining economy and its impact on working people, then you need to look for other culprits. What is happening in Arizona is a travesty, playing on fears, a racist piece of legislation was passed that allegedly addresses a problem that has been proven to be on the decline. This article is lengthy, so I don't want to go on further, but I just want to say that what Trump is doing is stirring up antagonisms between people by making issues of people's ethnicity and blaming people of color as the problems besets America. And, of course, we know this is not true. And it ignores the fact that with U.S. imperialism, every country around the world outside of perhaps European-dominated countries is a target. And we must really understand that immigration, the issue of immigration, is something that we should fight to defend because we're all workers in a larger sense, and to pit workers against each other is a divisive tactic that lends itself to the racism and attacks on people of color that's taking place throughout the United States. And so if we understand how imperialism works, we understand why this is an issue here in the United States today. And I'll just leave it at that in the interest of time.
Thank you. Brother Val, your mic is open. Brother Val, your mic is open.
Yes, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we hear you.
Oh, good. I just like to quickly elaborate on two of the speakers. You know, first, the sister who spoke about Rikers Island. If you're gonna misappropriate the name Rikers, you know, to basically an institution that just speaks for itself in terms of the enormity of the outrage, you know, just for lack of a better elaboration, you know, we should, or at least there was actually a movement some years ago to rename it after Ed Koch. After all, he was the mayor who prevailed or who reigned sort of, you know, over New York City, which saw the greatest incarceration and, of course, the greatest victims too, you know, all from minority neighborhoods, or at least the overwhelming majority from minority neighborhoods. So, of course, it could be, I could be sounding sarcastic, but Mayor Koch certainly, you know, would have been a nice name to go onto the island rather than onto a bridge, you know. In fact, as many have already observed, you know, he just reigned over all that outrage and oppression and deaths. We could talk about, you know, execution and genocide, you know, which basically makes even Nero, you know, who played the fiddle, as they say, played the fiddle, looks like a real commanding leader as compared to Ed Koch's, obscene reign. Anyway, on a different matter, I also want to go back to one of the speakers, you know, one of the brothers who spoke about the incarceration and the arrest. In today's New York Times, there's a nice article. I'm not sure if it's an article or an op-ed written by an ex-inmate, you know, and who actually pretty much spells out how, when it comes to arresting people of color, you know, there's, you know, it's basically scorched earth, you know. And Kamala Harris, that's how she rose as DA of San Francisco, you know, as is described in this article in today's Times, where she just went after, you know, where she made it look like she was protecting the minorities by going after cops who were not really pursuing leads when the victims were basically minority. But then when she wanted to get statewide fame, or even national fame, you know, as she now has achieved, she began to basically throw away the key and administer a scorched earth, you know, sort of reign again, you know, which again led to a statewide or I would say a macro expansion of what Ed Koch was doing just on a city level. So here we are, you know, we have these leaders, and unfortunately, they also, you know, they kind of rise from minority background, but just to achieve status and stature and national, you know, national positions, where then again, you know, as vice president or president, she would again, you know, then unleash her obscene, agenda internationally. After all, you know, the White House does occupy an international sort of leadership. So it's, you know, I'm just basically commenting, and I'm just drawing attention again to, you know, how we continue to be oppressed, and, you know, just for political and personal agendas. And I'm glad to be part of this this forum tonight, where we, you know, where we kind of basically uplift each other, in addition to enlightening each other, so that we can keep the faith going, we can keep the battle going, we can keep the movement going. So I wish to comment. I wish to basically not just, you know, thank everyone, but even commend everyone, you know, for being a part of this forum. And I look forward to even further contributions in the days and weeks ahead, especially at this crucial time, with the election coming around the corner. Thank you so much, everyone, and have a good night, as I probably will not be talking again tonight. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. And as I say over and over again, education, education, education. I enjoy the program as much as anyone. I love the program. Thank you for being a part of. And with that said, Sister Betty, take us home.
We have one more person. The mic is still open. 6226, your last four digits. First digits are 517. Your mic is open. Did you want to take us home? Okay, well, I guess we waited too long to open their mic. I hope 517, the first three digits, 6226, you will return. And as everyone who contributed tonight has made it clear, the struggle continues. And I am honored to be with all of these warriors on the Blog Talk Radio, Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. Please return next week. It looks like we're going to have to go back to extending it to 2 hours so we can give everybody a chance to develop their theme. Thank you so much, and good night.
Thank you. Good night, my brothers and sisters.